This is a reading of The Origin Scroll, Volume 1 of the Tarka Trilogy, by Richard S. Tuttle. Chapter 8. Progress. Alex raised his shield as a sword came crashing down, arcing towards his head. He deflected the blow with his shield, and allowed its downward force to aid him in his roll towards his opponent's feet. He rolled his body, knocking the other man to the ground. His opponent was confused, but Alex had planned this move well, and timing was everything when your life could be measured in seconds. Alex was instantly on his feet, holding a point of the sword against the other man's throat.
"Enough," cried Eddie. "I can never predict what crazy stunt you will try next. Why can't you just fight like everyone else?"
Alex extended his hand and helped Eddie off the ground.
"I don't know," replied Alex. "I guess I just don't see the sense of standing there and trading blows. If someone is trying to kill you, you ought to do whatever you can to survive. Most times I think the best way to win is to do something your opponent doesn't expect. Anyway, I won again today, so you have to make dinner."
"I always have to make dinner," Eddie complained.
"Not true," retorted Alex. "Last week I had to once. Remember the roast duck with chestnuts?"
"Yeah," sighed Eddie. "I remember. You tripped was all. Come on, I'll race you back to the cabin."
Alex had grown quite fond of Eddie, and the boys shared a cabin. Eddie was actually pretty good with the sword, Alex realized. He just never seemed to catch Alex's trick of the day. Alex stopped at the little knoll where his grandfather was buried. He did every day, and Eddie won the race every day. Alex never really knew his grandfather, but this simple grave had come to represent Alex's mother and father to the boy. Alex looked down at the village named for his mother, Lavinda. It had grown to quite a village over the last several years. The first winter had been rough on the villagers, but the villagers were tough. They had worked together and not only persevered, but had actually grown. Men had been attracted by tales of a village with all women. Most of the men had come to offer help. Many had stayed. The men found that their help was welcome, but the women had things under control. These men admired the women for what they had done. That admiration led to courtship and quite a few marriages. Other couples came as well. The first-year strikers came in all winter. Many of them had escaped Yaki attacks also. The Yaki had attacked all over the Gordo region, not just Alex's village. Those who survived were drawn like a magnet to Lavinda. The village had grown so much that it was approaching a town. Village customs had also been set that first year. The villagers had started the winter in one common building, now Lenore's barn. Every day the villagers would go out and work on a cabin. When the cabin was completed, a family would move in. The villagers would start on the next cabin. Eventually, everyone had a cabin. Today, when new villagers arrive, the entire village helps build the cabin. They always keep one cabin available for guests to live in while their cabin is built. They also hold village meetings every full moon, and Alex is still the village leader. He had tried to step down and let someone else take charge, but the villagers would hear nothing of it. Alex and Eddie, and sometimes the rest of the boys, would practice with swords that they had confiscated from the bandits on the road to Kalamar. Archery practice was also commonplace. The exodus from the old village had impressed upon everyone the need to know how to defend oneself and the rest of the villagers. The village even had a defense plan. It was improbable that the Yaki would ever attack on this side of the Boulder Mountains, but there were other dangers to prepare for. It's not that the villagers lived in fear. They lived with confidence, knowing that they would survive again if terror came. Alex walked down to the cabin. He must have stayed at the grave longer than usual because Eddie was ready to serve dinner when he arrived. Lenore had a cow that had fallen into a ravine and died, so everyone in the village would be having beef tonight. The smell of the beef roasting caught Alex as he entered the cabin. Beef was a delicacy in the village. Lenore's herd was just getting to the size where it would be permissible to slaughter one once in a while. The village had been living on hunted game and probably would for some time. Game was plentiful in the valley. Eddie prepared a beef and mushroom dish with a honey-based sauce. Eddie was a natural cook, and Alex savored each bite. The sound of horses outside caught the boys' attention. Alex raced out and saw three men riding into the village, with at least a dozen additional horses. Eddie came running out and handed Alex his bow and quivers. "Are you boys still carrying those funny little quivers?" the lead rider shouted. It took Alex a moment to recognize his old friend. Lark had really grown. He was a rather large and imposing figure, his biceps pressing against his shirt as his arms moved.
"Lark, you old dog," greeted Alex. "Decided to come home, did you?"
Lark dismounted and introduced his companions.
"Actually, I'm making a delivery," answered Lark. "A dozen horses for the brave men and women of Lavinda. Compliments of Oscar Dalek."
"Oscar, how is he? And your mother and Reese?" questioned Alex.
"Eddie, see if you can round up some table and chairs. We need to invite our guests to dinner, and I'm sure everyone will want to hear what they have to say."
Alex was correct. Everyone gathered around Lark as he told stories of Oscar and his prosperity. Lark also brought the villagers up to date on all of the friends they had left behind in Bordone. Someone asked if Oscar had ever gotten his stone house on the hill. Lark replied that Oscar had not, but had managed to acquire an entire city in southwest Targa. Alex smirked. He was not surprised. Alex brought Lark up to date with the village and how it had progressed. He explained that they did still carry the little quivers. Indeed, they made a point of tracking Murex and killing the mature ones whenever they could. The village had amassed a large stockpile of quills. Alex asked if Lark or Oscar had seen or heard anything of Geneva since the cave, and was disappointed when Lark said they had not. Egum interrupted Geneva's experiment.
"Geneva, you have learned faster than any student I have ever had. You devoured my books and are capable of performing any spell that I am capable of, with the exception of the dark side. Even Sarek and Kirsta took 7 years to learn what you have learned in 3. Unfortunately, that brings us to the question that we have both been avoiding for some time. I have been studying the dark side for over 20 years now, and I feel that I have learned a great deal. As I said in the beginning, I am bound to teach you the full extent of my knowledge, but you are not bound to stay and learn it. You don't need to answer right away. In fact, you are welcome to stay as long as you wish and continue reading my books, though I doubt there are many left that you haven't read."
"Egum, you have been a wonderful teacher and more. Sometimes I think that you are much like the father I never knew. I could not possibly leave you now. Besides, I have nowhere left to go. There are times that I am amazed at what you have taught me. I could have gone through my entire life never knowing the ability that was dormant inside me. You have created in me a thirst for knowledge, and given me the moral values to know how to use that knowledge. I am forever indebted to you. I will stay."
"I am so glad," remarked Egum. "I would have sorely missed you. I have lived alone for many years and thought myself impervious to human attachment, but you have shattered that illusion. I am proud to be thought of as a father to you, for you are the type of woman that any man would be glad to call daughter. I sometimes wonder who your father might have been, for surely he must have been a great magician."
"You believe him dead, then?" she asked.
"Undoubtedly, Geneva," the wizard answered. "If he were alive, he would have found you by now, your mother as well."
"You are probably right," she agreed. "It doesn't matter. Uncle Hazra was always kind to me and cared for me, and I have you now. I have decided that I want to learn the dark side."
"Geneva, are you sure?"
"The dark side is evil. You know that I am only studying it to counter Sarek. Other than that, it has no place in this world."
"I know why you have devoted the last 20 years of your life to it," Geneva stated. "But you are wrong to believe that Sarek is the only reason for learning it."
Egum was shocked. Geneva could not possibly turn into another Kirsta, could she?
No, Kirsta was a brilliant student and a wonderful girl, but Geneva was so pure of heart that he could not picture her executing a dark spell.
When Egum didn't answer, Geneva continued.
"Egum, I have 2 reasons for wanting to learn the dark side. First, it is knowledge, and I have a thirst for knowledge that is unquenchable. Second, someone needs to counter Sarek and others like him. Should Sarek defeat you, it would be up to me to defeat him. We cannot allow the world to be subject to his whim. For me to refuse to learn because I am afraid or because you are afraid is not acceptable. Even if Sarek is defeated, there will always be another Sarek. No, Good magicians must learn destructive magic. It is the only responsible path. You have shown me that a magician who studies the dark side does not have to be evil. Do you have so little faith in how you have taught me that you would fear me turning to the dark side?
No, replied the mage. I have faith in you, Geneva. I fear the loss of your innocence in regards to magic. My knowledge of the dark side troubles me from time to time. I have just learned to control it. I would be much happier having never learned it, though. I fear that I am doomed to consign you to the same fate. You are correct, however. It is up to good magicians to safeguard all life, and we cannot be selfish about it. Very well. We will start instruction tomorrow, but for tonight, let us be merry and put Sarek out of our minds. Sarek rose from his chair and walked around the library. He had been at this temple way too long, but the knowledge stored here was incredible. For 3 years he had been looting knowledge from under Brother Dominic's nose. The old fool had accepted Sarek as Brother Timothy. He had tried once, shortly after Sarek arrived, to get confirmation from the temple in Clandon. How unfortunate that his messenger should meet such an untimely death, only minutes short of returning to Brother Dominic. Sarek was sure that he now possessed spells that no other magician alive could use. Some of the volumes in this library hadn't been read in hundreds of years. He wasn't sure, though, if he was any closer to finding the origin scroll. He had found many references to the old tome, verifying its existence, but the most recent mention of it was the cargo manifest of a Lenorian ship bound for Trekkum, the capital of Sordoa, and that was 350 years ago. He would have to get one of his black devils to check public records in Sordoa. Sarek had no more time to spend in this library. He must continue with his plan to get rid of Egum and take the old magician's library for himself. He would have to stop in Bordeaux on his way home. His network of black devils had reported on Lagore's disappearance while trying to retrieve Cauldron, Sarek's black stallion. Sarek was sure that Ramor was behind the loss of one of Sarek's trusted operatives. He was assured that his horse was still being taken care of by Oscar. Oscar had left Dalek and was returning to Bordeaux. The city was coming along nicely. The carpentry shop was busy dawn to dusk, the main frame of the shipbuilding factory was complete, and the docks were in place. Already 40 homes had been constructed, and workers were moving in every day. His first 3 ships would leave Tigerette within a month. Baron Whitley had taken to the task of organizing the workers with a zeal that surprised Oscar. He got along well with the Baron, and always spent a couple of days at his castle when he was in town. Now that everything was proceeding so well for Oscar, it seemed almost anticlimactic to deal with Tulik. Tulik had lost another shipment, and had been unable to cover the loss. Oscar, through a money lender in Balfour, had lent the money to Tulik, requiring his house as collateral. The note was past due, and Oscar meant to collect. Tulik's reign over the poor people of Bordeaux was at an end. Oscar was nearing Bordeaux when he detected a noise in the bushes. It was much too large a noise for small game. Oscar picked up speed, and soon a rider emerged from the woods, racing after him. Oscar looked back and recognized Ramor, charging with his sword drawn. Oscar carried a sword and a bow, but he did not want to fight with Ramor. He would not have a chance to get off an arrow, and he was no match for Ramor with a sword. He sent his horse into a gallop, but Ramor was still gaining on him. Oscar raced around a bend in the road and nearly collided with a man dressed in animal skins, most likely a trapper. Oscar was racing down a rather rare section of straight road when he heard an inhuman scream. He chanced to glance back and immediately slowed his horse and turned around. Ramor was lying in the road, burning. It was a hideous sight, and the stench almost emptied Oscar's stomach. By the time Oscar made it to the charred corpse, Ramor had ceased to exist. The man in skins had stopped, and Oscar asked him what had happened. The man stated that Ramor had just burst into flames, and he didn't know why. Oscar's ring warmed his finger, and Oscar stared at the stranger. The stranger addressed Oscar.
"You must be Oscar Dalek. My name is Kit. I see that you are wearing the ring I gave to Carson. That must mean that you have his horse, Cauldron. He asked if I would stop by and pick it up for him." Oscar's ring was getting very warm, and he knew that the man was lying. He also knew that whatever happened to Ramor could happen to him. As if sensing his thoughts, the stranger transformed into Carson before Oscar's eyes. "Okay, Oscar," Carson said. "I'll stop trying to defeat my own ring. The man I sent to pick up the horse never returned. Ramor killed him, just like he was about to kill you. I have been busy and was not able to come myself until now. Actually, I'm rather glad I happened along. I like you, Oscar, and I would have been disappointed if Ramor had disposed of you before I got to him. Don't ask me who I am, because I will not answer you. Let us remain friends as Carson and Oscar. I mean you no harm, and will leave as soon as I trade you this horse for Cauldron." Oscar knew Carson, or whoever he was telling the truth this time, and agreed to trade horses. Carson deflected Oscar's questions, so Oscar stopped asking. Oscar had heard tales of magic before, but he was glad when the stranger mounted Cauldron and left. Oscar stopped by his home and refreshed himself and caught up on the company news. Fram was handling most of the shipping business now, and only occasionally took a wagon out. Lark informed him of his visit to Lavinda, and Oscar promised himself that he would take time to get out to the village for a visit. Oscar, Lark, and Fram rode up to Tulik's house and knocked on the door. Oscar noticed that Tulik's security guards were absent. He figured Tulik had been unable to pay them and they left. An old man admitted the party after Oscar had asked for an audience. They proceeded to Tulik's study and found him sitting at his desk staring out the window. Tulik looked at the party entering and his face turned into an angry scowl.
"What are you doing in my house?" demanded Tulik.
Oscar looked at the old man and could almost have pitied him, had he not had Oscar's father killed. "You misunderstand my intentions, Tulik. I haven't come for a social call. I have come to tell you that you have 3 days to get out of my house. Ramor screwed up and lost one of your shipments. You had to borrow money from a lender in Balfour, putting up this house as collateral. You have failed to repay the note, and it is overdue. That note, Tulik, was mine."
Oscar could see the fury and hatred in Tulik's contorted face. "Your house, indeed, boy Dalek. Not while I'm living. Your father was as ignorant as you, and Ramor will do to you what he did to your father. Now get out of my house."
Oscar could see that Tulik had not only dismissed them from the premises, he had also dismissed them from his mind. "Tulik, Ramor won't do your dirty work anymore. I watched him die on my way into town. He was waiting for me, but you already know that. What he hadn't counted on was a magician who had lost a certain black stallion. It's a nasty sight to watch a man burn to death. I guess you're going to have to kill me yourself, Tulik."
Tulik's expression went from shock to despair. He was defeated, and he knew it. This young boy had crushed him more painfully than any death he could imagine.
Tulik's death had been a slow, lingering 3-year disease that had eaten him bit by bit. He said nothing.
3 days, Tulik. After that, we physically remove you. And I wouldn't suggest staying in town. There are quite a few townspeople down there practicing throwing rocks."
Oscar turned and left. When Oscar thought about it, Tulik's demise was probably a lot more painful than the death Ramor suffered at the hands of Carson.
Sarek stabled Calderon and climbed to his laboratory. Mordak had already returned from the goblin camp.
"What news of Galdar?" asked Sarek.
"He was getting a little mad about the meetings being canceled until I convinced him that you were off gathering information on the attack," answered Mordak.
"The attack?" questioned the Dark Magician.
"Yes. You asked me to find the key to getting Galdar and his goblins to attack the kingdom. Well, the key is that they now believe that the kingdom intends to attack them. I fed it to them slowly over the time you were away. As you requested, I met with them every 6 months. I stayed there for the first half year, but could find no motivation for their cooperation.
On one of my visits, I overheard some talk about new building in the disputed area, and the idea hit. I told Goldar that the kingdom was working on a plan to depopulate the disputed area to keep Cordonia from getting it. I assured him that the first phase of such a plan would be a military strike to wipe out the goblins. This got him very excited, and he wanted details. I told him that you were personally taking charge of getting the information because of your high regard for him. It's a good thing the fool doesn't have one of your rings. Yes, I should probably learn to be more careful with those. It is such a childish spell that I forget the power it offers a normal man. You've done well, Mordak. I want the attack to begin at the start of winter so that both armies get bogged down and are forced to wait until spring. This will allow enough time for Egum to learn of it and come to the aid of the kingdom. It is too late to organize the offense for this winter, so we will tell Goldar that he needs to attack next winter to stop the invasion of his homeland. It's about time we stirred up a little excitement. I can hardly wait for the fun to begin. We also have preparations to make. I want the Black Devils alerted. When Egum raises his ugly head, I want it on a pike.